Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Ruthless Obsession podcast. My name is Diana Jebbia. I am your host. Oh, by the way, we're part of the SPDM crew network of podcasts. Forgot to mention that. So we got some really cool shows on here, so make sure you check those out. You might have noticed Shane is not with us today. It's just me, Oos. I sound so white saying that. Just you and I talking wrestling. Right now, I just finished Raw, and I kind of want to throw myself out my floor-level window because I'm so fed up with just the predictability and, I don't want to say laziness, but, like, I don't know. Here's where I'm getting at. Finn Balor. He is just jobbing out, like, every single week, and it's not his fault, but these writers literally have nothing for him. They have nothing for him. Like, so King of the Ring, he was supposed to go up against Drew McIntyre, and one of my friends and I were talking about this, and it was like kind of believable, like, all right, he's gonna lose against Drew. But then Drew's not medically cleared, and they have him go against Jay. I know. I'm audibly sighing like you. They have him go against Jay, and Jay beats him. And to me, it's just not believable. Finn is so talented. I'm not saying Jay's not talented, but he's a really great tag team partner, tag team wrestler. You know, the Usos are some of the greatest tag team teams. Tag teams, wow. One of the greatest tag teams that ever existed, you know, to ever do it. And Finn is just so athletically gifted, and he's got these amazing moves. And I just feel like Jay's not there as a wrestler yet. Yeah, his gimmick is cool. Everyone loves the yeet. Everyone does a little hand do boppy thingy. But I don't know. I'm just not wowed with him as a singles wrestler. And the fact that he beat Finn for the next round of King of the Ring, that bothered me. And then something else that bothered me, not as much, but okay. Sheamus and Gunther. I know Gunther's probably going to win King of the Ring. But I was really, like, bummed that Sheamus didn't win. Like, I'm like, why did you put these two together? Like, I get it's a great match, but, like, one of them has to lose, and neither one of them should lose. I don't know. And then finally, the last thing that bothered me, because I actually want to talk about Backlash tonight, but, like, I'm so moody now after this episode. But this whole Sammy, Chad Gable, Bronson Reed, like, you fumbled the bag by not giving Chad the WrestleMania match against Gunther, because now it's going to be triple threat at King of the Ring in a couple weeks. It's too soon. I don't think they're going to have Sammy drop the belt yet. And, like, I don't care about Bronson Reed. I always say this, but his intro looks like those bowling graphics, like when you hit the pins and it's like strike and, like, a little, like, pin comes up and gets knocked out of the way. Next time, I promise you, next time Bronson Reed comes out, watch his little Titantron thing and you tell me that it does not look like a bowling thing. You would be lying. You would be lying. I don't know. And it's just, they're wrecking each other's matches. Sammy and Chad, it's getting so repetitive. This feels like how over the summer, every single opening of Raw for like 2 months was Cody and Sammy and Jay versus the Judgment Day. And it became a major snooze fest. So I don't know. I think Chad should have this belt. I don't like this heel run, though. They dug themselves into this hole, and it's not a good time. So, people at Raw, wake up. Okay, that is my little TED Talk. On to a Backlash. And every time I say that, by the way, I want to go like, whoop-pah. You know, did you watch Friends? I'm waiting for you to answer. Okay. Because there's this episode where Chandler, like, does the whip, and he's like, whoop-pah. Chandler's my favorite friend. It makes me so sad that Matthew Perry died, but that's another topic for another day. Okay, I'm Googling. Look at me. I'm so prepared. Googling the Backlash card so I could pull that up and talk to you about it. Overall, I have to say, I really enjoyed Backlash. That crowd, holy crap. Like, they completely blew the U.S. out of the water. they had their little songs. They had their little chanties. There was, okay, I don't want to get too crazy. My mind goes all over the place. But at some point, I'm going to do a little chant translation. But yeah, killer crowd. The matches, for the most part, were good. There was a little sloppiness, which I'll get into on the individual matches. But overall, it was a fun time. You know, I like a morning pay-per-view. I think, because that one started, what, at 10 for me? It was 1 Eastern, 10 a.m. That one might have been a little too early. I remember last year when Money in the Bank was in England, that was like a noon pay-per-view, and I could rock with a noon pay-per-view because it's not too early to start having a beer. Like, if I'm up at 10 and it's like, well, I'm going to have a good old Labatt at 10 with my egg whites. No, I don't know. All right, on to the backlash card. So right away, we have the Bloodline versus Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. And oh my God, the star of this match was the crowd singing every single word of Randy's theme song. Like, literally every word. And if you watch SmackDown the night before, they did it. They did that too. And it made me so happy. Like, I have this game I play with myself. Like, why is Diana crying? And on Friday, I was crying because Randy just looked so happy that the crowd was singing his song, and he had this look of pure childlike joy on his face. And he's just this big guy, and like, knowing that he had like a cocky way about him when he was first champ and when he first came into the business, to seeing how humble he's become. I love his wife. I love his family. It just made me so happy. So I cried on Friday because, you know what? I am a girl and we do that. I mean, guys do that too, but you get my point. Anyway. All right. So this match, I was like really hooked in the beginning because right away these people start going at it. Oh, it was versus, by the way, the new Bloodline. So we have Solo Sikoa, woo, and Tama Tonga. And they start like beating the hell out of each other, like punches, and then they're going after security and officials and Nick Aldis, not Nick Mysterio, comes out and is like, this is going to be a street fight. Pretty much too long, didn't read. You guys are bad, and this is going to be a street fight. So now they can hit each other with a bunch of other objects, and there's no DQs. So that's a little hinty hint that something major is going to happen later on in the match. So, yeah, like the hitting one another and stuff, I thought this was really fun. Paul Heyman looked like he was about to shit his pants multiple times, which is very entertaining. I like that this new Bloodline is just like ruthless obsession. And Paul Heyman kind of doesn't know what to do with himself. He looks like he's seen a ghost every second of his life now, and it is wonderfully entertaining. So then we all were like, oh, Jacob Fatu is going to join. Nope, he did not. Who, in fact, did join was Tongaloa. And if you're like, who the hell is that? Because I know a lot of people were. That is Tama Tonga's brother. I don't want to get tongue-tied. So, like, little recap there. Tama Tonga, Tongaloa, brothers, no Jacob Fatu yet. And you know, I have to point out, like, we at home didn't catch this, but of course, like, the people there IRL were posting to social media. There was a little bit of a botch, so the ref was counting, and he was yanked out by Tongaloa, but that's what it looked like to us because of some nifty camera work. IRL, he actually did, like, a scooty scoot, like, he yanked himself out because Tongaloa missed his cue. That's awkward. What a way to debut. Like, oh, missed my cue. That's an omen. Anyway, so Bloodline wins. I don't know how I feel about it. And now everyone's also like, well, that's kind of, is that a valid win? Because the ref yanked himself out. And like, I don't know. Food for thought. But obviously this is continuing to set up the whole bloodline advancement of the storyline. We know that Jacob Fatu is coming in at some point. We also know that it was not Roman who pulled himself out of the draft. It was Paul, and they haven't spoken. So that's a little interesting. Oh, by the way, Roman was in Disney World when I was there, and I missed him. I was really, really mad about that. But anyway, if I had to grade this match, what should I do? Should I do letters or numbers? I don't know. I'm going to do numbers. I'm going to say like 7.5 out of 10. Like, I enjoyed it. It was very action-packed. Wow, action-packed. We love a street fight. Did you notice, by the way, they didn't name the street fight after the town in France? I feel like it's because French people don't street fight. But yeah, they're probably too classy for that. All right, moving on for the women's championship. It was Bayley, Naomi, Tiffany Stratton. This is one of my favorites because Tiffany Stratton rocks and I want to be her when I grow up. And I just need to do another quick TED talk. Can we like treat Bayley with respect? Because Bayley was left off the Queen of the Ring poster. Like, hello. I feel like people are treating her like she doesn't even go here. And she does. She very much goes here. She is a championship. I love Naomi. I love Bayley. I love Tiffany. So like this triple threat, I was so pumped for it. And overall, it was really entertaining. Obviously, some stellar displays of athleticism from Tiffany Stratton. Like, that girl can backflip like it's nobody's business. When it comes time to grade, though, like, I have to grade it a little bit lower than I would like to, unfortunately, just because. And I hate saying this because I love Naomi. Like, I'm such a total divas girly. She was always one of my favorites. Like, my friend Zari and I refer to her as my girl, like our girl. But she looks a little rusty out there. There were some points where it was sloppy. Like, at one point, she slipped off the ropes and had to get Tiffany down another way. And things just weren't executed as smoothly as it could be with her. I know she was at TNA for a while, and, you know, she's been back since January, so she's probably still kind of getting her footing back here. But, yeah, I wish I could grade it higher than I'm going to. Bayley looked great. Tiffany is just such a star in this ring. I really think she's going to be Miss Money in the Bank, and I think she's going to go, like, balls to the wall with it. Like, we're looking at a decked out pink briefcase. I feel like she's gonna try and invent her own rules because she's Miss Money in the Bank. Now that I'm thinking about it, that also sounds like something Chelsea would do too. So I kind of like to see a Chelsea and Tiffany feud, and they're both on SmackDown. So yeah, I feel like that would be really cool. Another highlight in this match for me though was Naomi twerking on Tiffany. Like, that is how you do it, girl. Practices twerking in corners so I can twerk on my enemies. I feel like that'll backfire on me. But anyway, yeah. So Bayley retained. Good for her. Was kind of disappointed in the ending. It was a roll-up by Naomi, and then Bayley reversed it and retained. So kind of anticlimactic is the word I'm looking for. But all in all, it was a fun match. It was a really great display of athleticism. I could watch Tiffany prettiest moonsault ever any single day of the week. Major win for her as she's making her way into SmackDown and on the main roster and carving her name out there. So yeah, grading this, I'm going to give it a 6. I really, like, if it wasn't sloppy, I would give it an 8, but it's a 6 for me. All right. So next we had Senor Money in the Bank. He's El Campeón now. Damian Priest up against Jey Uso. This was for the World Heavyweight Champion. That should be Finn Balor's, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah, it was fine. Am I the only person who is like, I don't see Damian as a champion. Like, it kind of looks like a teenager bought a WWE belt from Toys R Us and he's wearing it around school and has a button down and dresses really nicely. And he's like going up to kids in the hall, like, I'm the champion. And they're like, you know, what are you doing? I just want to go to the bathroom. we're going to math class, you know? I'm not really thrilled. I do like how he's leaning into the all rise thing. Like, instead of telling Jay to get up, he was saying rise. I'm like, that's neat. He's really asserting himself as leader of the Judgment Day. You know, he had a solid South of Heaven choke slams and all that jazz. We had a cameo from JD and Finn. He got annoyed at them for interfering. But then tonight on Raw, he's like, that's my bad. I'm sorry, guys. I don't know. I feel like I don't really know where we're going with him, and that bothers me. And then everything I said about Jey Uso before stands in this match. And in case you don't remember, I'm just like, he's fine. He's not the greatest singles competitor. I don't know. It was okay. It was forgettable even. So, I mean, if I have to grade this, which I do, I'm going to give it a 6, but here's the difference. Whereas the women, it was like, oh, you started really high, but I had to knock off a couple points for being sloppy. With Damian and Jay, it was like, oh, yeah, the most I can give this is a 6. The absolute most. But, you know, also, sidebar, the crowd, that French crowd, they had the yeet, no yeet going on with when they were punching. That was a lot of fun. So even they can, like, take, like, a meh match and make it a lot of fun. All right. So moving on. Next, I believe, was the women's tag team champion match. So that was the Kabuki Warriors and then Bianca Belair, Jade Cargill. I like this match. Obviously, I love Bianca Belair. She is so talented. It is ridiculous. And Jade Cargill is a marvel. She is wonderful. She is so strong, but she needs a little work. That's kind of my main critique of it all. Well, no, there's side Kairi Sane. There's another critique coming up, but just wait a second before I get ahead of myself. Jade Cargill, here's the thing, and I keep saying this, I'm like, they built her up. There's no story. They're just making her out there and like pin everyone, and she was in these like squashes and matches, and it feels like there's no depth to her. And she's still like, you could tell she's still a little green on the mat, which is like hilarious, little old me saying that. Like, I'm greener than she is, obviously, but you're listening to me because I'm recapping this pay-per-view. There were just a couple points like where she looked a little lost and, you know, looks like some miscues and all that with her. But I mean, she's still just doing this, and I get it. Like, everyone's allowed to have a learning curve, but I still feel like she should have been brought out sooner. Like, bringing her out, I don't remember how long she was signed before the Rumble, but bringing her out at the Rumble and then like having her go back away and then return when did she come back? I don't know. Recently, whatever it was, Mania, right before Mania. It just seems like inauthentic to me, but that's not to say she's not a talented wrestler. Like, I don't want people to misunderstand me, because look at what she did at the end, that whole finishing sequence with Kairi, when like Kairi went to jump on her and she did the whole flip her around and yada, 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 hold her. And then the Jade, what's her name at the finishing? It's like the Jaded or something like that. Like, Kairi became a rag doll in that moment. All hope was lost for her. And that is wonderful. So obviously Jade is a very strong woman. She's got this incredible ability in the ring. I just wish that WWE took the time to really develop her story, even throw her in NXT. Like, there's no shame to have had start her off in NXT for a little bit. I think Tiffany was still on NXT at that point. You could have had some bangers of a match between the two of them and then brought her into SmackDown. But it just seems really inauthentic for her to be hidden away, like advertised as free agent, hidden away, debuted at Rumble, go back away, come back for Mania, and now 3-4 squash matches later and a tag match, she's tag champion. Like, it just, there's better ways we could have gone about that. But like I said, we do have new tag team champions. Thank God. The Kabuki Warriors were getting a little stale for me. And by the way, so going back to Kairi Sane for a minute, did you catch, this was so awkward, there was a point where Kairi, I think she went to pin Bianca twice, and the ref was literally like, no, 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 you are not legal. And I don't know if that was trying to be a heel gimmick, like trying to go against the rules, but it was really awkward and sloppy. So if I had to grade this match, I would, I don't know if I want to rate it higher than the other one. I might have to. I think just because, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10, whereas I gave Tiffany, Naomi, and Bailey a 6 out of 10. Just because there were some really great displays of athleticism in this match. We do have new tag team champions. Bianca's a beast. And I also, I love that Bianca, you could tell she's a good leader and mentor. Like, she's really guiding Jade throughout this new experience. And, you know, it's a different way of wrestling than AEW. You know, there's different camera angles and whatever. And you could tell Bianca's doing a really good job of leading her. And I barely spoke about Asuka, but she was there too. And she's always very enthusiastic. So good for them. And now Damage Control is on Raw. So I think that's also an exciting development. Like, they have to stay on Raw, which is tonight we saw some interesting feuds between Damage Control and then Liv Morgan and Becky Lynch. So I'm interested for that dynamic to play out. So mostly maybe the extra points just because of the title changeover. And I'm excited to see what Jade and Bianca can do with these titles. But please, WWE Writers Department, because I know you just listen every single week, let's give more depth to Jade. Thank you. Okay, so next we have main event Jey Uso. But Cody Rhodes, AJ Styles. Oh my God, what a freaking match. So, by the way, this was like the first time that this undisputed WWE championship went defended. I was going to say defeated. That's not the word I'm looking for. Defended without any interference since, like, I think it was 2019 of Matt Riddle. Like, what? That is insane. And it was one hell of a job by Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles. Like, they were just out there doing the most in the best way. By the end of it, they were sweaty. They were tired. It was wonderful. Oh my God, I can't even, just the displays of athleticism. I know I keep saying that, but like, it's truly insane to watch. Like, these are not tiny men flipping around. These are big guys. I refuse to use the M slapping M word, but these are big guys and they are twirling around like little pretty ice capade dancers, but edgier, obviously. It takes a lot to do all that. And it's not something I take lightly. So another big star in this match was the crowd. I mean, they kept singing this one song every time AJ did something. And I looked it up and I'm not even going to attempt this French because I don't understand it. But there's some victory song and it says the word phenomenal. And obviously AJ Styles is the phenomenal one. So they sang that for him, and I thought it was really cool. And obviously, like, Styles was being a good heel because he was not that he wasn't enjoying it. Like, I'm sure deep down he really enjoyed it, but his character was not getting swept away by it. So what I really loved about this match was there was a lot of, like, will they, won't they? Not will they, won't they kiss, but, like, will they, won't they win? You know, counters. Just as you thought that Cody was going to break out the crossroads, there was a counter by AJ Styles. There was a springboard 450 that Styles almost won. And it's like, how are these men kicking out? How are they doing it? That is some Chris Angel shit right there. But nonetheless, so entertaining, so high energy. I don't know how these guys do it. Cody retained. It was a really great first defense of the title. And if AJ had to lose, which obviously we all saw it coming, like, he did one heck of a job. Like, it was nothing to sneeze at, that performance. Really, really awesome. So yeah, I mean, oh, and also quick shout out, AJ Styles' gear was designed to be the same colors that he wore up against Dusty Rhodes, so Cody Rhodes' dad, back in 2003, I think it was, when they fought. So I thought that was a nice little nod there. yeah, really overall, Backlash was just a really entertaining event. It was a nice Saturday morning watch. I felt energized and ready to go on with my day after that. And I do actually want to, before I jump off, I want to translate some of the chants that the audience said. So the one that I just told you about with AJ Styles, there's a bunch of French words and then phenomenal. And that's like la, 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 la. Like that is a song that was actually like big. I think it says the 1998 FIFA World Cup. Like it was leading up to then. It's like a victory song or something, or it's like a pump up song. So that's why the crowd was singing that. The one we heard the most was whenever a count out would happen. And at first I thought they were saying Sacre Bleu, which like everyone thought that's what they were saying, but no, they were saying Sacre Bleu. My French is so good because I took years and years of ballet. No, it's terrible. What that means is, so when they were doing the near falls and they were counting like un, deux, and then they go simplement deux, that means like only two. So I thought it was cool, but then like maybe after the 98th one, I kind of did starting getting a little annoyed because things sound sometimes affect me. But I still give them credit for that because they did kick the U.S. asses as far as chants go. We need to step it up. And fun fact, one of the French like play-by-play guys that came in, and they had like a big pop for them right off the bat. But he's the one that they – I don't know if he started the chant, but I think it's something he would say, and that's how the chant kind of developed. And of course I can't find it now, but – I was reading like on Twitter along with the show, and there were a couple of times during the Bloodline match where they essentially were chanting like, that's not nice. And I love that. I think that's hysterical. And then we went back to Raw tonight and it was what? Because we are so creative. Come on, people. We'll workshop a chant together and we'll come up with something and we'll be great. One more honorable mensch before I jump off. But how cool was the Uncle Howdy QR thing? And there was one on Raw, but I was too lazy to pause my TV and scan it. So I got to go find the screenshot and do it that way later. But if you did not look that up, during Backlash, there was a QR code and there was like some weird ass kid's voice that people are saying sounds like Alexa Bliss, which it kind of does. And it was just like, we're coming and what, I don't remember the whole thing that one said. It was kind of like, we're coming and whatever, just like insert creepy thing about people coming and kids' voices and believe and whatever there. And then on that landing page, there was a number. And then if you highlighted the number, it says you did this, which now that I'm thinking of it, that voice did say you did this a couple times. I'm like, what did I do? What did I do? I want to know. Tell me. But if you call the number, which I did because I have no life, it was like a computer generated voice, like back before they were really human sounding. They were kind of weird. It kind of sounded like this. It was really weird. And it was like, you know, there's the shepherd, the story about the shepherd who lost his sheep and he had 99, but he left them to look for the other one. Like, we're coming back or something. I don't know. It was a whole lot of spooky stuff, which I love, but I really thought Uncle Howdy was coming out of Backlash and he sure didn't, which there's also rumors that we know who the Uncle Howdy Six, the Wyatt Six is going to be. So I will pull that up real quick just so I can have everyone in order. It would help if I could type and speak at the same time. Hold on. Okay. So there was some clue with a bunch of letters. So it was UEDNJ51A. So the U, people are saying, is Uncle Howdy. E, Eric Rowan, which we know that he has just signed back with WWE. D, Dexter Lumis. He's a creepy one. N, Nikki Cross, which, by the way, we know she had been in, like, some trance for the past few months. And if this was long game planning on their part, big pats on the back for them. Jay, Joe Gacy, another creepy person. 5 + 1 = 6. Why it's 6, a little math there. And then A, Alexa Bliss. I dig it. Let's get them out. Or not, because I kind of like the QR codes, but I don't know. I'm like, oh, I love the QR codes. I love a mystery. And I'm like, just tell me. I want to know the surprise. And that's just how I roll. But anyway, I'm going to shut up because I could talk about this for years. And we all have lives. Most of us do. Mine's debatable. But thank you so much for tuning into another episode of the Ruthless Obsession podcast. If you like us, make sure you check out all the rest of the shows, a part of the SPDM crew of podcasts. We're a big old family. Special thank you to High Flyer Creative. They did our cute little logo. I love it so, so much. They're super cool. They really work with you. They consult you with you. They don't consult you. They consult with you. Have a nice little combo about what you're looking for. Make the whole experience personal. Give you some options. And I know if you are looking for any sort of logo, they're the people who will get the job done for you. So again, check them out. High Flyer Creative. And I'm Diana Jebbia. I will talk to you next week. Thank you.